Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is Tuesday. You know what that means. We're joined by Justice Mosqueda, Acme Packing Company, of course, at JUMOSQ on all the social medias. Justice, wonderful to be back chatting with you. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. Did you break the combine record for rushing? Because those wide receivers who said that they were going to break the combine record did not hit the 40-yard dash like they thought they were.
I don't understand whether there's any advantage to potentially saying something like that, because you only look worse in this scenario. And it's way better if nobody's expected to break the record and then you do it. Like, that is so much better than if there's maybe some cool if you called your shot and then you did it or whatever. But to me, it's so much cooler if you're not expected and all of a sudden dude runs a 4.19, whatever, it's something insane. Calling your shot in that situation is, I don't think, any good.
Yeah. And then we get into the weird stuff where it's because that Texas receiver was talking about it, right? And
yep.
He only ran a 4.39. And now that's being looked at as a slight negative toward him. And then just no one runs. And we're just in the cycle. And
yeah,
I don't know what we do. I've always said the agility drills are probably the most impactful drills at the combine. Those are the ones that people are dropping the most. People say that they're going to run them at the pro day. They just don't end up running them at the pro day.
Nope.
And yeah, a lot of people didn't work out at the combine, and they're also not going to work out at their pro day. And we're sort of facing the same issue that, NFL Pro Bowl and NBA All-Star Game has been facing, where guys might show up for the trip, but they'll be half-hearted in terms of their actual effort to kind of compete. I don't know how you fix it, but certainly happening. And I feel like people are talking about it more this year than ever.
One thing I want to fix is, and this is no slight at Kent Lee Platy, who does an amazing job with the relative athletic scores. We can't be celebrating somebody with a perfect 10 relative athletic score if they didn't run if they didn't run the agility drills. Sorry, Shamar Stewart. I don't know what he ended up with, but I know for a little bit there was a 10.0, but there was no agility test. I'm like, that shouldn't be a 10.0. You don't get a 10.0. And I know it's relative or whatever, and it's averaging the scores, but you should get negative points for not testing. It shouldn't be celebrated that he got a 10.0 when he didn't do the agility drills. But when if he did the agility drills, he wouldn't have had a perfect 10.0 score. That's all I have to say about that.
I'm with you. 100%.
And I don't know what you do if just you put a 10.0 and then just put a dunce hat on top of it or whatever. You need to have some sort of asterisk.
Incomplete.
Yeah. Something that would just show hey, it's impressive, but it's not that impressive because you didn't do the ones that you weren't going to test well in. So we are on to you and we know exactly what you did and you don't get full credit. It's like if I in college or high school or whatever, just only tested in the subjects I was good in. My GPA would have been a whole heck of a lot better if I got to choose. I'm actually not good in science. So I'm not going to test in that one. I'm going to actually just leave that one out. I'm just going to test in math and history or social studies and gym class. I'm going to test in those. Sorry, science. I'm not feeling it this week. Come on. It's not real.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know what the NFL does to get more guys out there. I mean, maybe they just invite more people and make it more competitive. And it's hey, look, if you don't want to run, someone else will run and they might take your spot type of situation. But outside of that, the days are already stretched super long. The push to prime time is a lot of this stuff too. So if you don't understand what a timeline for these guys are, right? You're waking up butt crack of dawn. You're getting all your medical stuff done in the morning, all your height, weight measurements, all that stuff. You're going on the field, you're doing the 40s, you're doing the jumps, then you're doing your on-field drills, which is you know, you see the wave drill and stuff like that. That's when quarterbacks throw all that stuff. And then after that, you're doing the agilities after, you know, that long day. And then after that, you're doing interviews at night with teams. So I don't know what you do. The medicals are the last thing that's going to go, right? That's the most important part. The interviews aren't going to get cut. I don't know if you just ignore like the on-field, like the non-testing on-field stuff so that guys will do it, but it's not good. It's not good right
now. How much of the next gen stats, the data, the miles per hour that they have, all the tracking data from college in games makes this for general managers semi irrelevant when you have all the data and the chips and everything like that that's going on in college?
Well, do people know how to work with the data? I mean, the Bengals front office is like three people.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's a great question.
I think that varies a lot team by team. And I believe that data. So if they keep that tracking data, it comes from the schools. So the schools would have to be willing to give up that tracking data to people. Not every school has that tracking data, first of all. Okay. Right.
Sure.
I mean, I guess you're especially in the portal era where more guys are, you know, if you're playing well at the FCS level or G5 level, you just kind of keep moving up or G5 level to the P5. I would assume that P5s have it. But like if a guy's coming out of the FCS, I don't think you're getting that data point, right?
Probably not. Yeah, it's complicated to say the least. I don't know if you could like set like, hey, if you're gonna come, you need to do these minimal or like a minimum of like 6 to 8 tests or whatever. Otherwise you're not allowed to join. I don't know if that would benefit teams or not. Probably not, because you want the medical, you want the ability to meet with them in person. That stuff probably carries as much weight as some of the on-field stuff. So I don't know. There's not a perfect solution to it. You just wish. I know for me, like I know the radio show right after mine is the Mason Crosby show. And Crosby's like anti-combine altogether. Just like thinks it's a ridiculous thing.
He's fine.
What's I know? What,
why would he care about the combine?
I totally understand. Like he's fine with pro days and stuff like that, but thinks the combine's ridiculous. Like I don't know. For me, from just like being able to compare players not only in a class, but like you know compared to other players in the past, like it's really fun to see the data points to see. Oh yeah, this guy has the same height, weight, speed, agility as whomever. And all right, now I can kind of get a visual for their athletic ability and what it looks like on the field. Now I can go out and evaluate the tape and it just gives me a full picture of everything. I don't know. It's and it like when you get all those guys together or doing some like the gauntlet drill, whatever it might be, like you do get a feel for who's a little bit more agile, who's a little bit more limber, who's like who's more technical and like all that stuff. Like it does matter to me. And like, I don't know. I wish everyone was running everything. I wish there was a way to fix it, but yeah, I guess you take what you can get.
There's two things I want to say there. One, not surprise the player is just like, just watch the tape. Please don't judge me based off of my athleticism. When, especially at certain positions, there's pretty high correlation in terms of like, if a guy can't hit this, this, and this, he's probably not going to pan out in the NFL level, right? Second thing, these guys are reshaping their bodies for the NFL. Yeah. Which is an important thing to think about. There's a lot of guys who are putting on 10 pounds, taking off 10 pounds, things like that, and getting the data point on what the reshaped body looks like, or even injuries, right? Who was it? Torrey Horton, the Colorado State receiver. He added 10 pounds on his frame since he went to Colorado State. He also had this season with the torn ACL, and he still ran a 4.4. Yeah. Pretty significant data point, right? So it's not useless. I think it's definitely depends on the player. It depends on the position. But there's definitely value. We wouldn't be wasting our time. Like the NFL doesn't pay for anything, right? They get people to pay, they get taxpayers to pay for their stadiums, right? They're raising prices on YouTube TV for these games. Like they'd not be wearing all this money if it did not matter to them.
Well said. And I still think there's obviously a lot to glean, you know, from it, from the players that are testing. So let me start there. Who are your, you know, sort of big, yeah, let me start with like, what was your big combine takeaway in general outside of some players not testing?
Yeah. So the offensive line, I don't think we got like any information there. Because just not enough of them did the agilities, and that's really what matters in Green Bay. Green Bay's been pretty hyper specific on agilities for offensive linemen over the last 2 decades or so. Wide receiver is an interesting one. We talked about how there's not very many wide receivers who kind of fit the mold that the Packers need, right? They need a field stretcher. Jaden Reed cannot beat man coverage. I cannot stress that enough. I need Packers fans to understand that. His yards per route ran cuts literally in half when he's going against man coverage versus when he's going against zone coverage. You will rarely find a split that big at the NFL level. He is not a man beater. I need you to understand that. I'm saying it again. He's not a man beater. Get that out of your head. Christian Watson was really their man beating guy. Tore his ACL. They're going to need a field stretcher so that guys like Romeo Dobbs, Jaden Reed, Tucker Kraft can get open underneath this upcoming season. Matt also basically doesn't play anyone under 6 foot and 200 pounds, right? The only real exception has been Jaden Reed in terms of like the guys that he's played the most. You can say Randall Cobb. They didn't want to play Randall Cobb. Yeah. No. That was an Aaron Rodgers call. So the guys got added to that list for sure. You know, we talked about AU Manor. And I thought it was interesting. I dove more into his tape. I kind of like him a little bit better than what we talked before. We talked about Savion Williams, Emeka Egbuka, who didn't end up running, right? We kind of knew those were the guys coming in. But Higgins from Iowa State is a guy who popped up.
Yep.
Jalen Royals from Utah State. And, Luther Burden. He showed up a little heavier than people thought. We can talk about those guys if you want. I mean, Burden's interesting.
Sure.
So he was 5-star recruit, played outside receiver his freshman year, had like 300-something yards, was a starter out there, by the way. Just was not working. And then the last 2 years, they put him in the slot. He's made all the SEC, but he was running against safeties. He was running against linebackers. He was running against nickels at the college level. And if you watch his tape, they've run a lot of gimmick stuff toward him. A lot of his catches are like, you know, the little jet pops, right? And stuff like that. A lot of screen game. I think it was like 70-something percent of his receptions came within like 10 yards of the last scrimmage. Like, he's not the vertical threat, even though he's got that size and that speed. He's kind of like a running back playing receiver a little bit. Like, he's more Randall Cobb than he is Christian Watson. And it's not like he's a Randall Cobb clone, but he's definitely closer to that on the relative scale. He's also a slot only, really, the past couple seasons. When he gets targets and he's lined up out wide, it's pretty much the screen game. If you watch Missouri games, he's lined up out wide. Just know a screen is coming. So I don't really consider him as like a real good fit for Green Bay. Jalen Royals is interesting. He's got 20 pounds on Jaden Reed, but I think their play is very similar. I think he can get open against man coverage in the deeper. He's got a chance to get open in man coverage in the deeper range, but he's not like the most sudden guy in the short area that like he's going to win instantly against man coverage. Higgins is the guy who's really interesting to me because we kind of talked about this with like a Debo, right? Where it was like, yeah, if you can find the film of a Debo backpedaling, like he looks good, right? But you just have to like search for it. Higgins isn't getting off the ball at full speed all the time. But when you can find the clips of him actually trying to like eat up space as fast as possible, it's clearly there. He has a pretty good catch rate. I mean, he's got like a 6'7" wingspan. I think he's a little bit more limited in his route tree than a guy like AU Manor. I was looking at the tracking data and it was saying, you know, at the combine when they're running like the digs and stuff like that, AU Manor was hit actually the highest speed of anyone running like a dig. And I think that kind of checks out because I think he's a guy who once he builds up speed, he can kind of get that separation. Higgins is a guy that I kind of think he's more of like a vertical threat, comeback guy, stuff like that. Like, I want to say more of like an Alan Lazard, but like, I guess that he certainly is a tick faster. But yeah, I would say that those are kind of, if you're looking at wide receivers, which is what I'm kind of focusing on right now, because those guys are the guys that ran, and I think we're looking for a pretty specific type of receiver to add to Green Bay, at least unless, you know, they add a MVS or they add a DK Metcalf or something like that, or they trade a Romeo Doubs because they just saw Khalil Shakir got $60 million, right? I think we're looking for a very specific type of receiver. So adding those guys to the list and making them a priority to watch is kind of what I've been doing the past couple of days.
Who would you say fits best if you had to go the draft route? Like, if you could add one of those receivers to this receiver core as is, who would you be pounding the table for?
Yeah, so I think Burden makes the least sense out of those because he's slot only. I think in the similar vein, like Royals would probably be fourth on that list, right? Because I kind of think he's going to get kicked into the slot anyway. He can play outside, but I think having him and Jaden Reed is a little bit redundant, and we're having to work around Jaden Reed. Again, that's the part that I need Packers fans to understand. You have to work around that guy. If you're going to have that guy on the field, you have to kind of like build the wide receiver room around it. I think the guys who make the most sense are Ayumanor and Higgins, just in terms of what they can bring as a vertical threat. And then the third guy on my list, I guess, would still be Savion Williams, who is going to be a fun debate. I watch more of him. There's a clip where he's in the Wildcat. By the way, he took 46 snaps at quarterback this past year. There's a clip of Savion Williams in at Wildcat. He takes the snap, fumbles it, both palms on the ground, no ball. Picks up the ball, runs it like 20 yards up the sideline just because he's bigger and faster than everyone, and he runs hard as hell. That is probably the best play to kind of encapsulate the scouting report on Savion Williams, where it's just like, man, there's a lot to like, and there's also a lot of green in his game, for sure.
Just chaos. Like, you don't know what you're going to get on any given play. The easiest drop in the world, or making three people miss and getting, you know, 60-yard touchdown on a play. It's like nothing in between. It's really remarkable to watch. Peter Bukowski is very much trying to drive the Jaden Higgins train. Even, you know, so far as saying that pick number 23, he would be totally on board with it, thinks it makes sense.
No.
Justice is anti pick 23 for Jaden Higgins.
Yeah. I mean, there's, again, I think the Packers are going to be in the defensive tackle market, especially now that Osa's off the board, right?
Yep.
You know, was it official? Was it rumored? I can't remember.
Rumored that if they couldn't find a deal in time, that they would put the tag on him. Hasn't happened yet as of recording this, but that's been the consensus rumor, yes.
Right. So that's one of the two young, talented defensive tackles in this class we can actually get after a quarterback, right? The other one's Bill.
Did you watch Luis Rique at all?
The Boston College pass rusher?
No. Sorry. The Detroit Lions defensive tackle.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I have. He's a two-way guy. Could help Green Bay. I think it's a bad class for that guy to become a free agent just because the defensive tackle class is so deep. I mean, if you want to talk about a guy who did pretty well, like the top DTs didn't really run, but Derek Harmon, who is, you know, a guy that people are probably thinking is going to go in like the 20s, right? So like right around the Packers range, 6'4", 310 pounds, ran a sub 5 second, 40 yard dash time. I mean, just absolutely long as hell. He was a guy who, you know, you look at his frame and you're saying 6'4", you know, 310. He's probably going to be a nose tackle. Like, maybe he'll be a nose tackle, but like, he's up there in terms of pass rush production from the interior, and he was going against Big Ten offensive lines all season, right? So,
yep.
And he showed up in some of these big games, and it's pretty clear on tape that he's a very talented guy. So I think he's probably going to be a riser, and that's not even including, you know, guys like Grant from Michigan and stuff like that who could be around, like the Packers pick. Tyreek Williams, I think, is a really talented player, the defensive tackle at Ohio State. I haven't seen all these guys, but I know everyone who's watched them is like, this is a really good defensive tackle class. So I kind of think the Packers probably would be smart to look at the draft, especially with the team kind of being all right at defensive tackle right now. Like, they definitely need someone to come in and play more rundowns for them for sure. But going into the draft with Kenny Clark, Devontae Wyatt, Carl Brooks, Kobe Wooden, it's not like you're like, I have to add a veteran so that I can keep my options open and hope that a defensive tackle also comes in. Like, it doesn't make sense to add two guys at that position this offseason, especially with how kind of cluttered the roster is already.
It wouldn't stun me either if the defensive tackle free agent class was extremely suppressed until after the draft, because I think a lot of teams could be thinking the same thing of like, we just think we're going to get these guys that we need at that position via the draft. And if we get there and we don't get the players we want and end up having to go in a different direction, there'll probably be a handful of guys that are still out there, and then we can attack it at that point in time. So like a guy like TJ Slayton, it wouldn't stun me if Slayton was available post-draft, like, sincerely.
Yeah. And again, I don't know if people think about it this way, but the free agency class does tie into the draft class, right? When there's not receivers in a free agency class, or when there's not free agents in the, like, a good free agents in like a wide receiver class, that's when you start seeing like the Christian Watson year, right? Where teams just like every pick in the second round was just wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver. And guys like Tyquan Thornton and Alec Pierce, right? Get end up getting pushed up the board and go higher than people think.
And we could easily see that again in some of these positions for sure. Let me kind of transition over to, who were some of your just kind of winners and losers of this combine? A couple of people that maybe caught your fancy in a good way, and maybe a couple of players that maybe disappointed you in some way, shape, or form.
So from a Packers perspective, I thought Jahdae Brown measuring in at a legit, you know, 5'10" was a pretty big deal. The Packers do not look at smaller cornerbacks. That has been their mantra since Ron Wolf, right? And they got away from it because of Mike Sherman being a general manager, and they drafted Ahmad Carroll in the first round. And I wouldn't be surprised if a framed photo of Ahmad Carroll is like in the Packers front office somewhere, and they're just like, hey, never again, right?
Learn your lesson.
That's what I mean, not to go off on a little tangent, but that's one thing that actually surprised me about Rob Domofsky's reporting, that the Packers would potentially be interested in DJ Reed, because DJ Reed is legit 5'9". And you know, Jair is small to them, right? Like, it's as small as they go.
Hey friends, all football season we talk about all the amazing options that Prize Picks has available and the multiple different stat categories and promotions that are there for you to take advantage of. But it's worth noting that Prize Picks has you set for all of your favorite sports, not just football, and it is a great time of year to get invested in college basketball, soccer, pro hoops, and much, much more. And while there's never a bad time to sign up, right now you can download the app and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. So who are you taking for Prize Picks this week? For me, I'm going with Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball to put on a show on Wednesday night, Evan Mobley to dominate on Friday, and David Pastrnak to have a massive game for Boston on Thursday. No matter what season it is, just make sure that you don't forget to download the Prize Picks app and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. So what are you waiting for? Prize Picks, run your game. I wholeheartedly believe Rob's reporting. Like that
is, I'm not questioning
that in any way. Yeah, exactly. I just, the overarching thing from the agent just doesn't pass the sniff test for me that Green Bay would be legitimately interested in DJ Reed just because of that. Like, it just seems very outside of their character to potentially pay big money for an undersized corner who's going to have some of those just liabilities in his game just because of his size. Just not there, usually in their typical DNA.
Did you see Jordan Schultz's report? Not just the Jair report, but did you actually read the article?
No, I did not.
All right. So he said executives don't believe the Packers are going to be able to find a trade partner for Jair Alexander, basically.
Interesting.
But he talked about the cornerback class as a whole and mentioned two young players as guys who could potentially set the market. Byron Murphy. Do you know who else?
Paulson Adebo.
We nailed it, baby. We nailed it. This is why we watched the film, boys. We did it.
It's true. Like, it's not like, again, this is what I was, I talked about this the other day too. It wasn't necessarily about Adebo. Maybe it was about Adebo, but there's somebody else I think I was talking about too, of like, we can talk about like, you know, Adebo makes all the sense in the world for Green Bay. It's not like the other 31 teams in the NFL are just going to be like, oh yeah, we didn't think of that. We didn't think of attacking the super young, talented former third round pick who is, you know, only leaving New Orleans because they don't have the salary cap space. Like, it's not going to be this huge shock if he gets, you know, this big contract. And same thing with Byron Murphy, who, again, younger side of his career, coming off one of the best seasons. They put him on an island a ton with all the different unique blitzes that they were utilizing in Minnesota. He held up to it. So yeah, that does not surprise me one iota. I see the DJ Reeds and stuff like that, and I'm like, man, I like the Adebos and the Byron Murphys way more than I even like some of the players that were mentioned ahead of them, like the DJ Reeds of the world.
Yeah, and I think they make a lot more sense with the Packers kind of mantra too. I don't know how much the Packers want to be in the market for short-term rentals, which is really what you're going to be doing with Jaden Reed going into, you know, he's going to be going into year 30, which it's not that like he's going to hit a decline. It's like, the decline's probably already started. Like, decline. Have you ever? Okay. I was reading this book. Okay.
It's your first mistake.
Have you ever heard? I was reading this book. You know, when people are like, you know, your brain isn't fully developed until you're 25.
Mine's still getting there, but yes.
All right. Well, I have some bad news for you. It's not that your like brain develops at 25. And then it just like flattens out for like 4 years. It peaks at 25, right? In terms of your processing power. You can get into a lot of weird examples of this where like,
are you reading a chess book by chance? Because this is very like chess. Like if you're not dominating by an early age in chess, like you can't just pick it up at age 41 and expect to be great at it. Your time is gone, my friend. So there's a very similar situation in chess.
No, but I just brought this up to kind of talk about like peak performance times, right? So like there's this like really weird thing, and like, and this isn't part of the book. This is just something I've noticed and thought of is very weird. Like people who compete at esports, like they're geezers by the time they're 24, and then it falls off the map because their reaction time just starts dropping off at that point, right? You see a very similar thing where if you look at like, you know, expected value, PFF grades, all those things, and you're looking at players who play skill positions, right? Anything on sort of like the perimeter in football.
Yep.
It's not that you hit a wall at 30. It's that wall starts coming in at like 26, man.
Yeah.
Like, so getting a guy like a DJ Reed is not a long-term solution in Green Bay. I think that's more of a rental more than anything, where, you know, getting an Adebo or getting a Byron Murphy, you're at least giving yourself a chance where you're like, okay, hopefully he will play out through this entire, you know, 3-4 year contract.
Does the calculus change for you at all with Paulson Adebo? If like when before we were talking about him, it was more of like, can you get him maybe a little bit cheaper than these top corners? And that kind of plays a factor into it as well. Does it change the calculus for you if all of a sudden he is the one that's pace setting the market at corner? If he is like, I don't know, are we talking 16, 18, 20 mil per year? Like, what are we talking? Because to me, I think that it changes the calculus a little bit. Like, I like him. I don't know if I like him as like a top of the line premium corner that you have to pay a ton of money for. That might actually change things slightly for me when it comes to Paulson Adebo, but I'm intrigued to see what he actually gets on the open market.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. I think maybe because I'm expecting Murphy to get the most money, right? Just because of his age and all that stuff.
Checks out.
I think Reed will get paid more than Adebo, but on a shorter term deal. So like he'll get less guaranteed.
Sure.
The overall like length of the contract will be shorter, so it'll be less money on paper, right? But like maybe if Adebo is like third on that list, then like maybe you start dipping down to like the Chardavius Ward tier where you're like, okay, what is relatively cheap? And I know that is like a starting cornerback for at least a year or two.
Over under 4 years, $60 million for Paulson Adebo. What he gets on the open market?
I think it'll be a shorter deal.
So let's say 3 years, 45 then. Over under 3 years, 45.
Under, I think. I think under. Okay.
Would you do 3 years, 45 for Paulson Adebo? I think I might. I think I'm at least 3 years, 36 is a no brainer. 3 years, 45 in this economy, I think I'm okay with.
I don't know, man. Like, the Packers are going to have to pay a lot of players pretty soon. Ulrich Jackson got a contract that is going to be super relevant for Rashid Walker. I think
interesting. I thought you were going to say Zach Tom. Rashid Walker is even more interesting.
Well, Tom's a Pro Bowler. He's going to get more than that for sure.
Which I agree with very much so.
Yeah,
but yeah,
Tom might set the market at right tackle. Like,
for 120, what are we talking here?
Something. Yeah. Like a lot. Yeah. A lot of money. You look at the Khalil Shakir contract, and I know that both Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs have gone through injury concerns on their own. But from a production standpoint, if you're their agent, you're printing off a piece of paper that says, you know, hey, Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson have both caught more receiving yards and more touchdowns. They're from the same draft class. Shakir got $60 million. That's what those guys are going to ask for.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
So if Shakir's worth that, then Adebo is worth something similar, right? Like I'd rather have
the only thing is the injury concerns. That's the big thing with me.
Fair.
Yeah. I could do like
I feel like we are in
for like 26 or something like that. I'd be cool with Adebo. And maybe that's a better middle ground because then, you know, he could potentially earn more money if he stays healthy and all that stuff.
I feel like Alaric Jackson going for 19 mil per year and Khalil Shakir going for, what was it, 15, 16 mil per year, something in that range.
Yeah.
I feel like that is the warning shot that we should be prepared for of like, this is going to get very funny money very, very fast. And these contracts are going to be much, much bigger than we are expecting them to be. So that's what is so intriguing to me about this.
Yeah. Again, if the Packers should have received the news from those two contracts and just been like, damn it, man. Like the market is moving very quickly on two positions that we're about to have to re-sign pretty soon. And that's not even including like the tag money on Wyatt, the tag money on or fifth year option money on Wyatt, fifth year option money on Quay Walker. I know they want to get a long-term deal with Quay Walker done. Buddy, if I've seen people be like the Isaiah McDuffie deal is fine, and then people act like it's the worst thing in the world that they brought him back on like $4 million per year or something like that. The Packers fan base is just not ready for the Quay Walker extension.
Yeah.
And it's gonna happen. But you guys need to prepare yourselves.
The Isaiah McDuffie contract is couch cushion money at this point. Like it's maybe like slightly more than I would have expected, but not anything that I'm even like remotely like gives me a double take in any way, shape or form.
And the way that it's going to be structured too, because what it's 2 for 8 that can go up to like 9.5. The way it's going to end up working is like the details haven't come out, but the cap hits are probably going to be like 3.5 this year and then 5.5 next year. And he's probably not guaranteed next year.
No.
So like, I kind of get it. Isaiah McDuffie stuff, like the only thing that really tells me, well, one, we talked about positions where the Packers need volume versus where they need, you know, quantity versus quality, right? Yep. Linebacker, cornerback, and offensive line is really the positions where they needed quantity because they just did not have enough players at those positions to roll out a football team ready to play going into 2025. This certainly solves that issue. You know, if he's your third linebacker, he's going to play about a third of the snaps. If he's going to be playing in base defense, right, with, you know, a third of those plays on the defensive side, he's going to be facing the pass a whole lot less, which is kind of how you want to protect him anyway. I think all that stuff kind of works itself out. He's going to be able to contribute on special teams. He's good there. He works on punt protection, maybe the most important unit, I would say, on the special teams. The only question that this raises for me is I'm like, so Tyron Hopper isn't really what you guys thought he was, huh?
I don't think it means anything on Tyron Hopper. I just think he means he has to earn his job.
I don't know, man. Like, that was one of the weirdest picks I've ever seen Green Bay turn in, because that was a guy who was mocked as like people graded him as like a 6th-round pick. Packers drafted him in the 3rd. And then in a press conference, we're like, yeah, we thought we had a 2nd-round grade on him, and he couldn't even get on the field really in garbage time this past year, when a lot of, like, Zane Anderson was regularly getting in garbage time. So I'm just going to assume moving forward, I'll just Hopper play special teams, and that's what he's going to do until his rookie contract is done. And otherwise, I have zero expectation for that guy.
I don't necessarily disagree with that aspect. I'm not going to it with expectation. I just think that spot will still, like, if he goes out and proves that he can be the number three guy, he can beat out McDuffie. Like, if he shows it, but he's going to have to show it. I'm with you. I'm not necessarily expecting it.
Eric Wilson got on the field as the 5th linebacker, right? I guess that's the other thing too. It's, I don't think it's a 0% chance, but I do definitely think it seems more unlikely now than ever that Eric Wilson will come back to Green Bay. Doesn't really make sense to pay two veterans.
It would have to be a vet minimum.
Well, they gave him that deal, right? Like, they gave him the veteran exemption last year where they were able to pay him like $2 million, but it only cost like $1.5 million against the cap or something like that. It would have to be something like that, but I just think it's less likely because the Packers are really probably only going to keep 5 guys at the position. So you got to spend the draft picks somewhere. I mean, Goot was talking about,
there's going to be a rookie linebacker would be my guess as that number 5 guy.
Right. Goot, they were talking with Goot at the combine and he was like, yeah, I only have 8 draft picks for now. And I'm like, you barely have 8 roster spots right now that you need to fill. Unless you're like going to trade away Dobbs or something like that. Like, maybe some trades are coming in down the line. I mean, Rashid Walker, I guess, could be a potential another one, getting off of these contract years basically and trying to backfill there. But yeah, there's not very many spots in terms of guys who are under contract right now.
Just going back to McDuffie for a second, 28 players played defense for Green Bay last year. Where was, Isaiah McDuffie in regards to most snaps on defense last year of the 28.
So I wrote this up earlier, so there's a little bit of cheating, but I know he started 17 games and he played like 60% of the snaps. So he would probably be somewhere right around Rashawn Gary. I'm putting him behind McDuffie. I'm putting him behind Keyshawn.
You mean
not McDuffie, McKinney.
Yep.
I'm putting him behind Keyshawn. I think he played less than Evan Williams. He played less than Quay. I'm going to guess 2 defensive linemen played more than him. What is that, like 6, 7?
That was 6 that you've named so far, so it'll put him at 7.
Yeah, I'm turning in. I'll take the grade.
5th. 5th most snaps on defense last year was Isaiah McDuffie. Xavier McKinney was 1, and Keyshawn Nixon was 2, so you nailed those 2. Number 3 was actually Javon Bullard. So he was 3. Quay was 4. And then McDuffie was 5. Kenny Clark
got the wrong safety. I got the wrong safety and I put too many defensive linemen ahead of him. Yep.
Yeah. Kenny Clark was 6. Rashawn Gary was 7. I think you mentioned Evan Williams. He was 13th actually with 533 snaps only. So
yeah, because he got in late. But I just couldn't remember when they made that switch with Bullard and Williams. So that's kind of how I got that one mixed up. But yeah.
Fifth most snaps at linebacker last year for Isaiah McDuff, of any defensive player last year, which is kind of bonkers when you think about it. But
yeah.
Crazy. Before we get, I know we're already all over the place in the best ways possible. just kind of going back to the combine, one last question there. Did it change your mind about the draft class positionally in any sort of way of like, all right, we should attack this position more or less, or any positions that, you know, kind of surprised you, or was it basically what we kind of expected going in?
I think it was pretty much what we expected. I wasn't too surprised. You know, a lot of the top guys didn't run. So like if a lot more guys like flunked at the top, I'd probably feel a little bit more differently. I also haven't gotten like super, super, super deep into this draft class yet, because again, we've mentioned like I'm covering free agency and stuff. And when I do draft evaluations, I kind of set it and forget it. I'm not really worried about anything from that point forward. So I'm kind of taking like a hyper specific look at some of this stuff. So like even defensive tackle is a position I haven't really gone super deep on.
Sure.
Even though I understand that, you know, the draft industrial complex collectively is like, it's a very good defensive tackle class. And I've seen some of the top guys and I agree those guys are good. So I'm going to assume that they're right about the guys lower than them. But no, I didn't really have my opinion changed. I mean, I know the offensive line measurements came in and everyone is a guard, apparently. Like, that's what everyone says. I haven't seen all that many of them. I think Will Campbell's a tackle.
Yeah.
Kelvin Banks, I think, would be a very good guard at the NFL level. Maybe he gets a shot at tackle for, like, a team like New England is a great example, right? I think Vrabel took Skoronski, if my timeline is working correctly, in Tennessee.
It should be a yes.
Yeah, because that was 2 years ago.
Yep.
He took Skoronski. Wolf obviously comes from Green Bay. Green Bay has played very small left tackles at times in terms of their frame, right? David Bakhtiari was one of them that people considered a center. That's why he fell to the fourth round of the draft. Marshall Newhouse was another guy. I think he was under 6'4" flat. At certain points, he was, you know, the smallest left tackle in football. So like maybe a team like New England that like is really desperate for a left tackle would look at a guy like Kelvin Banks as a potential left tackle. I think his future is at guard. I know a lot of people are excited about the Missouri guy.
Yep. Freakazoid.
I haven't really seen him. I was focused on Burton, but I'm really excited to watch him at some point. I know, what's his name? Ariantre? What is it? The Minnesota right tackle?
I know exactly who you mean. He tested through the roof too, right? He's super fast and whatnot at like 330.
Yeah, and he's a guy who's like just off of the Packers' threshold numbers. But like at that big, I think they would still consider him. I wouldn't, you know, be holding to like, he didn't run like a 7.75 three cone. So he's off the board. I just don't think that that's what's happening there. So,
no.
Yeah, I mean, the tackle like landscape, I guess, is really interesting to me, in part because I haven't seen these guys a whole lot. But I do know that a lot of them measured in with pretty short arms. I know Brooks, Booker, Alabama guard.
Alabama, yep.
He had a poor showing, but everyone kind of expected that. Like, everyone kind of compared him to like Gabe Jackson and stuff like that. Like, he's more of a road grader guard, not really like a pass protector. Like, you really want him in like a scheme where he's just doing down blocks and stuff like that and just bullying guys up front. So I don't think that's going to impact his evaluation that much. You kind of knew what it was coming in. You know, one of the trendy phrases on like draft Twitter right now, right, is like, don't count it twice, right? Where like, we never thought, you know, Booker was going to be the guy who was going to be this like hyper athletic dude. So don't knock him when he's not. So I kind of think that makes sense there.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm very excited to dig into the offensive line class and obviously the defensive ends, the receivers as well. But I know there was a lot of really fun testers overall in this group. And yeah, I'm excited to dig into them. I know, like you've said, a lot of people are saying a lot of guards, and we'll see. I just think you guards are getting paid now too. You cannot find enough good offensive linemen, period. And I think that the calculus has changed a little bit there as well. Before I get you out of your justice, do want to ask you on a couple other players. Actually, before we get to those two, DK Metcalf, we haven't had an opportunity to talk about it a ton. Obviously, I had the crazy whirlwind on Friday. Now, you wrote about, it sounds like now maybe that's coming back to earth a little bit, and it sounds like maybe Seattle's not super interested in trading him. I don't know if that's a negotiation tactic with the teams that are trying to trade with them, or if obviously the reporting's been all over the place. How do you see this DK Metcalf situation playing out?
So DK Metcalf's a player that we've kind of been highlighting this entire offseason, right, for a couple of reasons. I think he makes a lot of sense for what Green Bay needs specifically in a wide receiver because of the field stretching ability. And then the second thing is Seattle's cap situation is in a great spot, and they're going to have to make some decisions moving forward. And unless their internal monologue is just saying, like, our offensive coordinator situation was so bad last year, Ryan Grubb coming up from Washington and then after a year leaving to Alabama after spending that failed season in Seattle, right? Unless our offensive coordinator situation was so bad and we think our guy is so good, and that's going to be the difference between last year's team being a playoff team and this year's team being a playoff team, I don't think you can run it back. If I were in Seattle's spot, I would probably try to rebuild, but I don't know if they have the capacity to do that right now, if they are, I guess, like the palette to do that.
Right.
I don't know what's happening with ownership. Jody Allen, I know this from being in the Northwest. She also owns the Blazers right now. Jody Allen was unable to sell the team until I think it's the spring of this year. She can finally put it up for market. The reason for that is the stadium deal in Seattle basically had a like 20-year timeline where it was like, hey, if you ever sell the team over this 20 years, then the city of Seattle can take 10% of whatever, you know, the sale price was. Sure. That expires. Do you want to do a rebuild when you're potentially going to be selling the team, right? I mean, think of what the Broncos did.
Yeah.
The Broncos went and did everything to get Russell Wilson, and they're like, look, look, this team has a quarterback, before they went to market. All politics are local, I guess, right? So I don't know if they're trying to manage expectations, shooting down some of these rumors. I know people who 100% believe these conversations about a DK Metcalf trade have happened.
Okay.
What do these, like, are they a fit? Like, no one notarizes talks in Indianapolis. No one notarizes right. these phone calls. So what counts as an official discussion, I think, can be up for debate. And whether the Seahawks are actually willing to move off of DK, or they're just, you know, weighing their options, I think is up for debate too. So I don't think the door is closed. And a lot of the stuff has been worded pretty specifically, right? So like Schneidman, and then who is it, Lowe? From The Athletic, both of them from The Athletic.
Yeah, I don't know who The Athletic guy is, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I don't know, remember who it was, but Schneidman's one was very interesting of like, as of yet or something.
As
like
of that. Yet, and, right now, they have not technically spoke like.
Yeah, just as many like little asterisks. And again, it's just an interesting wording.
I do not think the door is closed fully. But whether they do it or not, I can't call it.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I was more curious your thoughts. What, just to kind of wrap the DK thing up as well, what's the most you're offering for DK if you're Green Bay?
Two
and anything, or just two?
Just
two and a player.
I'll give you three and a player. I'll give you three and Dobbs.
Yeah. Two and Bo Melton back.
Sure. That works too.
We got a deal. Two and Bo Melton is the final deal for DK Metcalf. I will take that as well. I would consider two and Dobbs for Metcalf in like a five, maybe.
Sure.
Metcalf and yeah, sure. All right, that would work as well. Last but not least, Darius Slay, Brandon Ayuk. Slay released, Ayuk potentially on the block. Either move the needle for you?
Dude, the IU contract is weird. I didn't really pay attention to it because I hadn't, like, I don't care about the IU holdout last August, right?
Right.
And then by the time he signed, like, I'm already ramping up for the NFL season. So, like, why the hell do I care about Brandon Ayuk's status? That contract is super weird. So, like, the Niners basically didn't have to pay him anything this past year outside of, like, his relatively small signing bonus. But he has... So, he has a roster bonus that fully guarantees on, I believe, the 1st of April. And then... his roster bonus for 2026, and these are both like $20 million or something, north of $20 million. His roster bonus in 2026 also guarantees this 1st of April. And he has void years attached to the end of them. So it's an automatic void structure in the same way that like Jalen Hurts is. So essentially what happens is if you trade for Ayuk, his salary is basically automatically prorating over not over just the lifetime of the contract, but also the void years after that. So you're automatically assuming his payment on a credit card that you have to pay forward. And I think San Francisco is in a spot where I don't know if they want to move off of Ayuk, but the only wiggle room you really have to get off of this Ayuk contract is until April 1st. Right. So I think it makes sense why they're going to the media and throwing it out there and are like, hey, if you want to call about Ayuk, let me know because we have a pretty massive decision to make on April 1st.
Yeah. I don't see it happening. I certainly don't see it happening in Green Bay, but that's going to be interesting to see if they do move him, especially with Debo already moving.
He's coming off an injury too.
Yeah. That's like, the really tough part. And he did not look great last year. Like, it's a really weird situation. I mean, he looked awesome the year before. Like, he looked really freaking good.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't.
He held out until the end of August, and they were like, if we got to pay the guy. Like, that's how good he looked. But this past year was not good for him. And then he got banged up, and now he has this giant trigger that's about to be pulled. It's a weird situation. There's not too many contracts in the NFL that have been structured like this.
I hate the option bonus stuff. It makes it all very much more complicated, and I would wish that no one would do it anymore.
It's not even like it's the option bonus with the automatic void years. Like that's the craziest part where it's like, this is all premeditated. You didn't even want to give yourself the most of the time you could just tag on void years to the end of a contract. The player, it doesn't matter to the player. It's just creating cap space. He's still getting the same money, and there's no stipulation in most contracts that prevent it. So it's so weird that Ayuk's contract, Hurts's contract, they just have these automatic void conversions. And I'm like, why wouldn't you just give yourself the option? I can't imagine that the player would care about it that much.
Or just make it in the contract that the player would have to do it if they were given that opportunity. Whatever. You could do it a variety of different ways. But Darius Slay, anything there for you?
Not really.
34. No. 6 foot 190, played 11,000 snaps almost in his career already.
He's played like at that point, if we're getting down to like that level, I'm calling MVS already. And I know that's going to frustrate people, but I'm just going to be like, I want a field stretcher. Go get me the guy who can block and can run.
Wait. Darius Slay. Yeah, the corner for the Eagles who got released today. So I'm like doing like a double take. I'm like, am I missing something here? No, you're all good, man.
I'm Bozo. I was focused on wide receivers. Slayton, you look at his metrics.
I ever realized, by the way, that Darius Slay and Darius Slayton is just a T-O-N difference. I have never put that together for some reason. I don't know. I think I might be the idiot here.
Slay, from like a metrics perspective, is pretty much like a league average outside cornerback right now over the last 2 years. Very comparable to like what Keyshawn's numbers are for whatever that's worth. I just don't know. Like if you get priced out of everything, right? Like you swing for Byron Murphy, he tells you no. You try to get DJ Reed on a short-term deal, he wants a long-term deal with guarantees. All right, you move on. Paulson Adebo, you're priced out. Tardavious Ward, find somewhere else. Like,
so many things, so many people would have to tell you no before you get to slay, in my opinion, for it to make sense.
Especially considering that, like, if it's Slay or you give Carrington Valentine more opportunity to potentially grow, like, what provides you more value, not just in the short term, but also the long term? That's where it's like if someone gets injured in camp, sure.
Slay's still out there, sure.
Right. Like, I think it makes more sense from that perspective. If you're a team like big time desperate at corner, like Jacksonville Jaguars, I'm going to use them as an example throughout the offseason as a team that, like, you got to add like maybe three guys. Like, it's so bad there. Those guys shouldn't, the guys on your roster from 2024 should maybe not be in the NFL anymore, right? Like, that level of bad. I get going after a Slay in free agency, but I'd honestly be pretty surprised if he signed before like the owners meetings. That's usually when, you know, you get guys like an Andre Dillard and stuff like that, where it's like, all right, emergency depth, break in case of emergency type of guy. I think that's more of what he is than like a starter at this point.
Still picked off Jordan Love in the wild card game. So there is that, just because I can. Yeah, I don't know why I want to relive that for some reason. But yeah, that did happen. Yeah, actually, like, pretty impressive. Only 82.2 quarterback rating allowed. 45 receptions on 87 targets, 553 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 pick, 16 pass breakups, 6 penalties. So not bad last year from Slay, but 34 years old.
He's solid, but he's old. And again, like, guys like that, if I'm Slay and I just want a ring, I went in the first round. But I don't know. For what?
No, I get it.
Like, you have money. You have your health still. He's got his post-career thing going on with all the podcasts and stuff, right? So, like,
1 year cheap in KC or Buffalo?
But that's what I'm saying, is, like, if someone gets hurt and, you know, playoff contender, like, maybe I'll want a title chase, I'll stay in shape, and I'll see you guys in November. Like, that makes way more sense to me than signing him, you know, when free agency opens up next week.
Totally agreed. We'll see. It's going to be a whirlwind. Next week, are we talking signings? If we talk next Monday, is like 10th?
The legal tampering window will be open when we record next Monday.
That's going to be fun. We should just record the whole week next week. Just make it a fun one. Justice, you're the absolute best. Where can we find all of your incredible work?
AcmePackingCompany.com. I'm pumping out the scouting reports on those wide receivers. We're going to have everything covered for you for free agency. If you want the written word and not video like Andy. Or audio. You can be listening to audio too.
There you go. No, go check out Acme Packing Company every single day. They do incredible work. It is more than worth your time. And like I said, every time before I record an episode, I always double check acmepackingcompany.com just to make sure I didn't miss anything through the course of the day, because I know if somehow I did, Justice and friends have got it covered over there. So it is a absolute go-to. Find it again, acmepackingcompany.com. You can find Justice at JUMOSQ on all of your social media platforms. You find me at Andy Herman NFL in the podcast, at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Justice and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.